From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As the second Senate impeachment trial of Donald Trump commences this week, much of the case against the former president relies on how he incited his supporters to attack the Capitol based on their sincere belief that the 2020 election was stolen from their leader. In one of the highest voter turnout elections in more than a century, what was certain about last year's race was that Americans exercised their democratic rights with enthusiasm and that Joe Biden won. Rather than celebrate that enthusiasm, Republican-controlled state legislatures are drawing the lesson that democracy ought to be curtailed if they are to win races. To that end, the GOP has introduced more than 500 bills in 33 states to make it harder for people to vote. The obvious pattern is that the party believes it will retain political power if the right to vote is suppressed. My guest is Stephen Rosenfeld, editor, chief correspondent, and senior writer and fellow for Voting Booth, a project of the Independent Media Institute. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Glad to be here.
So, of course, we know that there were massive voter suppression efforts leading up to the 2020 election. It's sort of an ongoing project of the GOP in state legislatures, and it's something that you've reported on for several years, right? So even the 2020 election, where we saw this huge voter turnout, we saw an election that was marked by the fact that there had already been this layer of voter suppression in many states around the country, right?
Right. Actually, 2020 was different in that regard. And this is an interesting and an important distinction to make. The pandemic, which was unexpected, changed all of the rules. And what I mean by that is states mostly west of east of the Rocky Mountains, who had never really relied on mailing out ballots, absentee ballots, to their voters, made a major, major shift to creating that option. And this was red states and blue states. And what ended up happening was in the primaries, which people might remember were delayed, when they first resumed, some red states, like Georgia, mailed everybody an absentee ballot application. But as things went into the summer, the Republican legislators in those states saw that turnout was actually increasing, and they tried to push back by inserting more steps in the process, meaning, for example, in Georgia, you had to apply for a ballot. And it really went state by state. And the interesting thing about this is many of the steps that were opposed by Republican legislatures in swing states were embraced by Republican legislatures in states that were not considered presidential battlegrounds. So it's really about political outcomes. It's not really so much as, you know, a red-blue split in that regard. And where we are now is most of those measures, and we could talk about what they were not passed in legislation. They were emergency measures. So the question is, do they get put into state law? So we have something now, you know, more than 500 bills introduced nationally. Some have been introduced by Democrats, some by Republicans, but in the states that were the key presidential swing states, and we could talk about Pennsylvania, and we could talk about Georgia, we've seen this in Arizona, we've seen an explosion of overreaching to really not even go back to where things were before the pandemic, go back even before then to roll back things that basically were pro-participation for several years, such as automatic voter registration in Georgia.
Let's actually have an aside about Georgia, just because right as the Senate impeachment trial is happening, Georgia has launched an investigation into how Trump tried to improperly influence what happened in Georgia by literally calling up the state secretary, Brad Raffensperger, to ask him to find those votes that he was insistent were lying around somewhere. that, you know, to help overturn the election results in Georgia. But Raffensperger, who, of course, took over from now Governor Brian Kemp, it's not like he's some, you know, upholder of voting rights and democracy. I mean, he seemed to have done the right thing since 2020's election. But he, too, of course, I understand, has been pushing voter suppression efforts in Georgia.
Not so well. It depends what you say are voter suppression efforts. The thing is, he has gotten behind some voter purges or what they call list maintenance, and some Democrats and progressives think that it's overly aggressive. But that's one slice or one step in a much larger universe, where Raffensperger, who is a socially conservative Republican, but he's an engineer, and he believes in science and math and technology. He stood by the science, math, and technology of the state's new voting system. If you go back a year, a federal court judge, who's Judge Totenberg, who is NPR reporter Nina Totenberg's sister, ordered the state to replace its voting system, so and do a whole bunch of other things. And this was because of people filing voting rights lawsuits, because there was so much voter suppression in the past. And these are technicalities that impede people and prevent them from having easy access to the system and casting a ballot easily. Just everything becomes a harder or more bureaucratic task. So the state got a new voter system, and every county was the same. And basically, with that, they came COVID, and the Democrats had sued, and they created these settlements. So what's happened is Raffensperger has been attacked by Republicans in his state for basically standing by the system that he introduced. And what they it's interesting because yes, while his office is investigating Trump, which was early in the week, the first day of impeachment, the Georgia Republican Party issued this, they call it an election confidence task force report. And basically they want to have confidence that they can change the rules so they'll be able to win elections again. And it's the most remarkable thing to look at, because it is a blueprint of voter suppression through bureaucratic technicalities. I could just, they want to take Raffensperger's authority away from overseeing elections. They want to stop automatic voter registration in the state, which goes back before the last election. They want to do all these things. They're just so in the weeds, and all they do is create more work for election people, for poll workers. They make it harder for voters.
And I imagine that the only way to justify this is to claim that the current system is somehow being abused and that there must be massive voter fraud. Do they come out and say that? And if so, do they prove there's voter fraud? Because otherwise, there's no reason to do it.
I am of the belief, based on looking at the evidence that I've seen out there, and I've been covering election administration, which is not just the same as voting rights. It's sort of like I've covered voting rights too, but voting rights is more like the philosophical, the right to vote, you know, just like the right to, you know, other rights we all have. But the election administration is, well, okay, how's it going to work? You know, Dr. King said, in a speech at the Lincoln Memorial in 1957, he didn't talk about the right to vote. He said, give us the ballot. So how do you get a ballot in your hands, and how do you turn it in? And that's where all of these things really come down to. If you think about what were the Trump lawsuits all about, the 60 plus lawsuits that were filed after Election Day, and the ones actually that there were actually several hundred earlier before Election Day, they all concerned the steps around getting a ballot, who can get it, and once you get it, how can you return it, and once it's returned, how can it be accepted or rejected. And after they didn't like the results, they started questioning the counting.
So they were trying to go after that part of an election that involves the actual ballots, as opposed to the part of the election that involves people being able to get to the voting booth or getting their ballot in the mail.
Both. Because what happened with the pandemic was that because of health reasons, governors and secretaries of state started issuing orders to try to either delay. Do you remember, like, Wisconsin in April, the governor tried to delay their presidential primary, and the Republican legislature, which is, it's a weak governor's state, went to court and won a federal court decision forcing the overturning the governor's, you know, health emergency ruling, and they had to have it that next day. And then we heard about, you know, people waiting for hours and hours in line because there are only 6 polling places open in Milwaukee, or if it wasn't 6, it was 10 or 12, and people got COVID. And it was crazy stuff like that. And every state early on was a little bit different. But come this fall, the election officials more or less figured out what they had to do. So over the summer, there were fights about drop boxes. Where do you return these things? There were fights like, you know, when can you start counting these things? And all of this stuff is in play. And unfortunately, it's complicated. And what was really a positive thing was that voters were really determined nationally to vote. And they were successful. I mean, if you think about it, think back over the summer, how all of a sudden people were told, you got to vote by mail. And then there was the attack on the post office. We forget about this.
And by the way, Louis DeJoy is still the U.S. postmaster.
And then people decided to make a shift in the fall and vote in person early. So we had about, the in-person voting and the early and the absentee or ballot or the mailed out ballot returns, because that's why sometimes they're mailed back, sometimes they dropped off in person. I think it was like 70 million people. It was more than, you know, it was an unprecedented number. Maybe it was 80 million, I forget, because so much keeps happening. But anyway, the point of all this stuff is that these rules are in play, and they're in play because in a lot of states, the legislatures didn't adopt these emergency responses. And now you're getting this crazy pushback, because the bottom line is this: Republicans cannot win when the participation really goes up. And now maybe they could win in some states if they weren't so against things like, you know, shutting down Obamacare, you know, extending healthcare eligibilities, but that's not where they are. And this is what they do. And this fight is just ongoing, and it really continues. And what we've seen, of course, since the uprising, you know, the storming of the Capitol, is that Republican legislatures, who are the most partisan ones, they don't want to accept the results. And they're using that. So they're saying there are dramatic weaknesses in the system. They say that the public doesn't have confidence, but they're the ones who are making the accusations of the weaknesses and saying that the public doesn't have confidence. And that gets repeated, and it just goes on and on and on. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you go back to Georgia, it was the most transparent presidential election we've ever had. They counted the ballots 3 times. But the opening line, these report, this is the first day of the impeachment thing, I know.
On Tuesday.
Yeah. The 2020 election revealed dramatic weaknesses in Georgia's system for conducting elections. And as a result, public confidence in the integrity of that system has been shattered. You know, public confidence cannot be restored by pretending that these weaknesses do not exist. This is a complete fabrication. There was never a state that counted its presidential ballots 3 times in our lifetime, Sonali.
Wow.
And they did by hand. And they found votes that were uncounted because poll workers forgot to press send on these, you know, from these precincts, that added to Trump's total. And he still didn't win.
So just a few extra votes is what he got, but not enough to change the outcome. So in terms of what we're seeing in other states, you know, like maybe Michigan or Arizona, do you see any pattern where voting rights or voting related bills that have been introduced after the November 2020 race, are those primarily in the sort of so-called swing states? Are they in the Republican-controlled legislatures? You said both Democrats and Republicans have introduced bills around voting. What's the pattern there around future elections and which political party is really involved?
The states that have the most regressive bills are in descending order. And this is why it comes from the Brennan Center, which about a week ago, 10 days ago, issued a report tracking these 500 bills. The states with the most regressive bills are Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Missouri, New Jersey, Texas, and Georgia. And what do I mean by regressive? They're trying to make voting harder. So what would they do? They would eliminate having what's called no excuse absentee balloting, which means that you have to, which means that you have to state an excuse to be able to vote. They would shut down or restrict permanent, early voting sites. They would restrict advocacy groups from mailing or collecting applications to people. They would find new ways to reject absentee ballots that are envelopes that have been returned. They'd make voting early or in person harder or shut it down. They'd create new voter registration hurdles. So if you think about all this, it's just step by step by step through the process would become harder or more limited and narrower. Or they would allow bad data for voter purges. And what I mean by that is there are federal databases that they say, well, we have to go to the National Postal Change of Address base. And that the data in that was never designed to validate or verify voter registration information. So you create a lot of false positives when you use it. And they know that, and they want to use it. On the expansion side is you have states that want to make no excuse absentee ballots permanent. Now, some of these states are Republican, but they're not nationally, national battlegrounds, like Alabama or Kentucky. And then you have bills that were introduced by Democrats in some of these states, like Mississippi or South Carolina that aren't, or Texas, not going to go anywhere, but they were introduced. And then you have other states that would, bills on the expansion side, the inclusion side, they want to require what they call a cure, which means if you mess up signing the envelope for your absentee ballot, you get a second chance to fix it. And then some states want to require drop boxes to return these. They want to start the processing of these returned ballots sooner. And that's really important because all of the post-election litigation that the Trumpers threw out or initiated came in states where they hadn't finished their counting. So you have a vacuum that was exploited. Well, if you start processing the ballots sooner, you don't have that vacuum.
And in fact, there were several states before the election that deliberately prevented the counting of early mail-in ballots and early voting or mail-in ballots and insisted that the counting only begin on election day, which necessarily drew out the process of counting, opening up that space for the Trumpsters to come, bang on the doors of the places where vote counting was happening, demanding them to stop the steal. In some states, they were asking them to stop counting. In other states, they were asking them to continue counting, depending upon whether Trump was up or down in the vote tallies. It was pretty sort of naked. Yes. That all they wanted was for these people to ensure that their leader won.
If you want to know why Florida wasn't in play in November.
Right, everyone expected it to
they
be.
They start counting really early. And like Arizona, they started counting weeks out. Pennsylvania, no. Wisconsin, no. Another thing that's really important to mention now, again, depending on the state's political complexion, it will either go somewhere or won't go somewhere, is 15 states have bills to restore felon voting rights. And some of these states, if they're red states, it's not going to go anywhere. But in blue states, it probably will. So who are these states? Because this is a really big deal. And Alabama, there's a bill. Well, probably won't go anywhere because it's a red state. Connecticut, Iowa, Kentucky, Maryland, Michigan, Missouri, Nebraska, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, Washington. So there are long lists like this for all these different categories and activities. And the question really then becomes, well, what are the chances? And the chances really depends on the political complexion of that state. If it's a red run state and a Republican governor, the chances are not very good. If it's a split governor and legislature like Kentucky, you know, it's somewhere in the middle. If it's a blue run state, the chances are better. And what's overshadowing all of this is what's going to happen in Congress. Are they going to pass this thing called H.R. 1, which is basically a bill that combines every piece of pro-voting legislation proposed by the Democrats going back a dozen years combined into one bill.
One federal bill, which usually a lot of voting legislation is done necessarily at the state level. This would be a federal level bill to improve voting.
Yeah, and the biggest questions around this, I mean, you know, we're talking about all these different topics or these issue areas in voting, and this bill is, it's not just about voting rights and election administration. It's got campaign finance. It's got ethics reforms. The thing is, the big question that people ask, apart from can it pass, is will it be broken up so some of the more palatable sections will pass and some of the ones that are more objectionable will be pushed to the side. So for example, it would require all states to have automatic voter registration. It would require all states to have uniform early voting. And it would require all states to have public financing. It just goes on and on and on. Every idea that you've heard that you've talked about for the past dozen years with election and political and democracy reform is in this bill. So all this is in play right now. And what's driving the Republicans is the same big lie that's driving the impeachment proceeding, which is that there was massive fraud and massive illegality when there wasn't. Instead, this last election, whether people like the process or not, or like the technology or not, it was the most transparent with the most reliable evidence trail that we've had in a presidential election.
And actually, just before we end, Stephen, isn't there also an aspect to this involving voting technology and some of these corporations that have been deeply maligned by right-wing media outlets that have now basically sued Fox News, pretty obviously leading to the firing of Lou Dobbs, Fox News having to play these disclaimers, and it's quite interesting to see these voting technology companies that maybe a few years ago Democrats were worried about now kind of holding the line on preserving election integrity.
Well, I think that it's a shame that so much of the system is privatized, because it's too important for too much of the technology to be in the hands of private industry. But what is really, really interesting is that the right wingers, and it's not just Fox, have gone after these companies and they've sued them for defamation. And it's only because they're being sued for, $1 billion plus at a time that they're actually responding. You know, they didn't respond to lobbying. They didn't respond to, all of our boycotts and this, that, and the other. But now, because they're being sued for billions of dollars, and the evidence of the false reports is just endless. I looked at this. The suit against Rudolph Giuliani by this one company that didn't even have a voting system that was used in some of these states where he was being attacked, it has 3,000 pages of exhibits, 3,000 pages of tweets and texts and emails and YouTubes and Fox News interviews, and it's so that's what's silencing them. But the big thing of having so much of our system in private hands, it's not the most comforting thought. A lot of countries run their own elections, and as a public function, governmental function, it's tied in with universities and all that stuff. So
right.
We don't do that.
Well, Stephen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time. And we'll link to your work from our website where people can find out more.
I post them all on votingbooth.media. That's what my own website, where everything is. And because not everything appears on every other website, it takes a piece.
That's votingbooth.media. Thanks so much, Stephen. Appreciate it.
Okay, Sonali. Thank you.
My guest has been Stephen Rosenfeld. He's the editor, chief correspondent, and senior writing fellow for Voting Booth, a project of the Independent Media Institute. We've been discussing the GOP effort to suppress voting in the wake of the 2020 election. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.